and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name is Robert and I'm here with Matthew.
Good day.
We're a couple of audio drama type guys who are basically looking to share what we know, encourage you to tell us what you know, and see if we can all be better for it. Now, this week, Mr. Matthew, what's the deal?
Well, here's a dilemma that we've either all faced as writers and producers, or will face in the future. It's a dilemma of when you come to write an audio drama, are you going to make a serial or an anthology audio drama series? So serials, Robert, what's an example of a serial?
Oh, like an actual running series where there's a narrative all the way through it?
Yeah, I think there's a couple that we quite like that we've never mentioned before.
Yeah, Edict Zero, We're Alive, Aftermath even, a very specific story arc that goes from beginning to end and other little subplots get added to it, basically.
And on the other side of the fence, we've got the anthology series, which is, you know, a collection of stories that don't necessarily relate to each other. Two good examples of that shows that we really like. The Truth, an excellent show, and Campfire Radio Theatre as well, who we're, of course, huge fans of. So they, you know, they make a career out of creating all sorts of different stories. There might be some common themes throughout in terms of how they're made, but you know that these stories could range wildly, they vary, and there's no reoccurring characters and reoccurring themes, is there?
No, that's right. So the best way to think of an anthology is tales from such and such, whether it's just from a producer or from a universe or whatever, I guess. I mean, I went for a long time without realising what an anthology actually was. I thought it was just like a collection of fan fiction stories or something, to be honest. So I actually had to look it up. So it's good that we've set that straight. But if your definition is different, let us know and we'll tell you you're wrong, probably.
So let's look at a listener's perspective before we make a decision on what would suit us best. If you're an audio drama listener and you listen to a series, a serial, the story, that'll draw you in if it's good and you enjoy it. And ultimately, you want to know how it ends, don't you? You want to follow that story from start to finish through to its conclusion. The setting of that story could feel very familiar to you. Sometimes almost nostalgic, you know, if it's been a while since you listened to the last episode. Maybe it's been the end of a season, it's been a long hiatus or something like that, and you return to that story world. You can get that feeling of nostalgia. And the characters as well, you know, you get to know them. We've mentioned Edict Zero already, Robert, but when there was a big hiatus there recently and then it came back, and I think I said online it feels like being amongst old friends again because you just know these characters so well and it's just so good to hear it all again. And that's something you get just by constantly listening to a long-running story, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, and it's easy to put yourself right back in there. You can remember what you imagined the characters to look like because you'd formed them in your head. And I think it is often, just on another note, why people listen to or create fan fiction is because it's easy to picture the worlds and the people involved and so on. So, yeah, old friends is probably the best term to use.
From a listener's perspective on the anthology side of things, I heard a good interview recently on the Sonic Society with Lawrence Raw, and he described anthology stories is a bit like a pick and mix, which, do you get pick and mix outside the UK? Do you get it at all now?
Only in cinemas, I guess, where you can mix and match. They probably call it mix and match elsewhere.
It's basically sweets, for anyone that doesn't know.
Candy.
All different kinds of sweets.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you listen to a consistently released anthology series, you might not know what you're going to get on that particular day of listening. Could be a futuristic story, could be a fantasy story, it could be anything. So you can always get closure in these self-contained stories. You get a beginning, a middle and an end, and I suppose some people like that, don't they? They maybe get the train in the morning and they just like to get a story to start it and finish it.
Yeah, I do like occasionally going back to The Truth and to Campfire Radio and just picking out something from their back catalogue. You know, and just having a listen, and it doesn't matter how far back I've gone or how recent it's been, because it's a standalone. So it's, you know, it's like going to a bookshelf and just choosing a book at random and being able to get through it all in one sitting, I guess.
Would you agree with the fact that maybe you might, as a listener, find the content more thought-provoking on an episode-to-episode basis in an anthology, because the anthology writer has a lot more freedom than the serial writer? That's someone who needs to maintain and further a long-standing plot. They've obviously, their characters kind of burden them in a sense, because, you know, they might need them for several episodes down the line. They also have a history, so you can't just force something upon them that they might not do. Whereas if you're just writing a self-contained story, you could write characters to suit your needs, and you could probably tell, you know, a bit more of a brutal story, if you like, or a really thought-provoking story in that episode.
Yeah, it was something that we found early on, wasn't it, when we were making Aftermath as a serial, that we had to establish rules to go on with, and then we had to remember those rules, and we sometimes contradicted ourselves in the newer episodes and had to say, ah, but remember, we've established this already, you know, so we were burdened with the earlier rules of our creation, I guess. And it's something you find in series as well, like often in Star Trek series, it'll be a case of, oh, and here's so-and-so's dad, I know we said he was dead, but it turns out he wasn't. And it's like, that's a little bit clunky. You wanted to have his dad in it, but you'd already said he was dead, because just for background, and now you're having to change the rules and it's obvious.
Yeah, I suppose if you're making a series, every little bit of information that you put out there can potentially trip you up in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of writers out there, in fact, there was a discussion on the Facebook group this week about, do you create a show Bible or like a wiki for your shows and just have all that back information in there? But, you know, that's it, just because you've got all these backstory notes doesn't necessarily mean you won't trip yourself up, because these notes can still contradict themselves unless you've really been through them thoroughly and maybe had someone else check them as well.
Well, yeah, look at one of your favourite franchises, Star Wars. When they made the original films, and then they wrote books to go along with it before and after the original films, they had these, you know, they brought out these huge Bibles of what happened 1,000 years ago, what happened 20 years later, and then they brought out the newer films, the prequels, and basically just dissolved all that history, which angered a lot of people. And that was fine. It's okay, they wrote more books, they had another Bible or seven Bibles or whatever, and now they're bringing out more films, and they've dissolved the future history again. So it's like, that's not very fair. I understand why they're doing it, but these Bibles aren't really worth the paper they're printed on, because the creators or whoever's in control might just forcibly delete it.
Here's a semi-on-topic story for you. Right. I've mentioned this on the show before, but when I was like maybe 10, 11, 12, I was really into the Games Workshop stuff, the Warhammer stuff.
Oh, excellent.
And it was my birthday, so I was allowed to take my friend to the Games Workshop in Edinburgh.
Right.
And I'd got all my birthday money, and I'd sat, like, at the back of the magazine, you had all the prices and stuff, and it's not cheap. Apparently, if you say that on their forums now, you get banned. Oh. Really expensive stuff, don't talk about it. And I planned out everything I was going to buy, and I ultimately just liked to paint and collect. I wasn't much of a gamer, I did do it, but I really liked Undead, and I really liked Chaos. I just thought the models were really cool, I enjoyed painting them. So when I went there, and you know the type of guy that works in the Games Workshop, comic book guy off The Simpsons, and I was like going up to the counter, and they're really enthusiastic, you know, oh, what are you buying? And I was saying, oh, I really like Undead, really like Chaos, just going to have one big army. And he went, no. And I was like, no? And he said, no, you can't do that. You have to have Chaos or Undead. And I'm like, well, you know, I like them both. But he was like, no. And he was telling me about this history and these wars. And you're right. Like, I'm 11 years old. And I'm like, you know, I think I'll take them. You know, no one's going to die. But
did he chase you out the shop?
Yeah, probably. I don't think I've ever been back in one, which maybe isn't a bad thing, because I couldn't afford it now.
Wow.
But getting back on topic anyway.
So Chaos and Undead don't get on?
Well, there's contradictory information from what I remember, but if we could take one thing away from the episode today, it's that.
Right. I don't know, maybe we could reconcile their differences and they can learn to get along. Because imagine if they did join up.
A peace treaty.
Yeah, they'd be amazing. Anyway.
So there's a fairly solid argument that a serialised drama will grow your audience because people get used to the characters and story and that bond grows strong over time. But on the other hand, Jonathan Mitchell at The Truth pointed out a wee while ago that they are seeing, and I think it's well over 100,000 downloads per episode, and his full-time job is actually producing audio drama. Like we've said before, they're obviously creating different stories every fortnight or whatever their release schedule is. So, you know, that's not 100% fact, is it? That in order to build an audience, you do need to be doing a serial.
My gut instinct is, as long as you're making something decent, then people will listen to it no matter what. But I am suddenly swaying towards anthology type stuff, I have to say.
I mean, ultimately, if you produce good content, if you tell a great or several great stories and you produce them to a quality standard, you will grow your audience, won't you? Because, like I say, ultimately people just want good content, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like I say, I could still dip in and grab episodes here and there for both Campfire and The Truth, which are anthologies, and I'm never let down. I listened to one of the episodes of The Truth recently, and it was really creepy. It was this guy had recorded a phone call with his girlfriend, and he was piecing a conversation, a made-up conversation out of her replies. Like, he would say something and then have her say something, you know, like a remix.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you any more than that, but the outcome of it is just, it made me really uncomfortable, you know, and I've listened to We're Alive with people getting ripped apart by zombies, but this was worse.
Yeah, it's a funny thing you mentioned that. I listened to one not that long ago by Oral Stage Studios, Intensive Care it was called.
Yeah.
And that really freaked me out. It was just really, it's just that self-contained story way of, you know, like sometimes a film will really stay with you for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And you think about it. And I suppose you're putting all your energy into this very small amount of time and you're really packing a heavy punch. Whereas, although, you know, series like We're Alive, they do, their episodes all have really interesting things happening. Probably not always to that degree. I mean, some people might have a narrow escape and things like that.
Yeah.
But in the self-contained story, you can get all sorts of things happening and it could really have an impact on you.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? Making something interesting and give people something to really get their minds hooked into it. You know, like, the episode I was talking about, there weren't a million sound effects or ambience or there wasn't a lot to it production-wise, but the story was absolutely key and had me hooked from start to finish.
So from a writer or producer's perspective, consistency of production and release is really important, isn't it? Do you think it's maybe fair to say that your audience will be less forgiving if you're doing an ongoing serialised story? You know, if you maybe have a break or a hiatus, do you think people get a bit more impatient than when they're just waiting on, you know, a new story?
Yeah, I think so, and with good reason, because there's that main narrative. They want to know exactly what happens next, rather than just another episode that's similar to the ones before, you know? If they're following that narrative and they're trying to keep a hold of all the different subplots, then yeah, they need that consistency, otherwise they forget. And I found that we, you know, in the early days, we were getting emails, weren't we, and messages saying, you know, hey, great, but where's the rest of it? Come on, we want more. When's the next episode?
Yeah. Like,
well, we don't know because we've gone back to the drawing board and sort of redesigned some of the storylines. And
we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, we're new at this, man, all right? So, yeah, I think if you're making an anthology and you can put out X amount of episodes sporadically over a year, once you've got that catalogue, people will be able to dip in and out all the time and it feels like it's been there forever. So, really loving the anthology idea at the moment.
Something that you've mentioned on the podcast before, I've not seen it myself because I don't really watch the television, but Lost, you talked about Lost and how they'll maybe answer one question but throw up another five, and they'll keep throwing up questions every single episode and just build you into a frenzy where you need to, at all costs, find out what's going on.
Yeah.
That's something that you can use when you're doing a serial, isn't it?
Yeah, they took that to a ridiculous level. And the writers actually admit now that in the early days, they were never going to answer the questions, ever. You know, they were just writing absolute carnage just to hook people in and get a second series made, blah blah blah. And eventually they realized that it was successful enough that they were going to have to take it to a climax, and then wrote a climax based on, like, well, okay, you know, this is what we've got left in the refrigerator. We need to make a meal out of this. So we'll make that with that, we'll make that with that, and we'll say this is it. And this is what we'd intended all along. But it wasn't, because they didn't intend anything. And that was a victim of its own success, in the way that if you're going to, you know, string people along, you've got to give them answers eventually. Like, that's what a series has to do. It has to be consistent. But it lost. Yeah, Lost was the ultimate in that sort of thing. And people drifted away from it because they couldn't follow it. You know, there were too many questions. And the one thing I heard from so many people was, I got lost with Lost.
Oh, was that the pun?
Oh, yeah, that never got unfunny, honestly. I, for one, watched, I know that's an alien word to you, watched Lost from start to finish. And I loved it, mostly. But I can understand why people were like, no, I can't have this. I can't just have question after question every week, to hell with it.
I suppose, you know, nothing really could be in your fiction unless it has a reason. If you've got, like, a series, and very early on, it's often referenced that, you know, old Bill is a master of the chainsaw, he's a lumberjack, but there's no reason to throw that in there. Yeah. Then you could expect that further down the line he's going to be getting that old chainsaw out of retirement, oiling it down and sharpening the teeth and maybe cutting a zombie's head off.
Yeah, suddenly it comes into the fore. Yeah, like, oh yeah, I used to be in the forces, but I'm just a school teacher now.
And that's that.
We're like, oh really?
So if you're doing a serialized story, you better love the story world, because you'll need to spend a lot of time there. And cast is another thing as well. You're going to need a stable cast if you're doing a serialized series. So are you working locally, or are you working with satellite actors? Are your cast aware that this is a long-running project? So do they know what they've signed up for? Do they think that they've maybe just got a role in this particular episode? You might have 30 episodes, so make them aware of that and make sure they're agreeing to it. And make sure people are reliable as well, if you're going to be using them. It's all very well people saying that they're committed to providing lines for you or turning up to recording sessions, but what if you can't rely on them? What if they let you down? That's going to give you problems if you've already released episodes and have that person's voice in there. So these are all considerations as well if you're going to be writing or producing a serial.
Yeah, you see people on Facebook advertising lines saying, you know, this is a recurring character. Now, what does that mean? Is it for 5 episodes? Is it for 100 episodes? Is it for the next 3 months? The next 6 years? It's worth having that discussion. Make sure people know what they are signing up to. I've heard of producers who maybe have had long-running stuff, and they've had actors that had decent quality, and then after a year, for whatever reason, the quality drops away. Like, for instance, they might be at college or doing hospital radio or something where there's studios available, so they're using them. But then once they graduate or whatever, then suddenly the mic situation changes, or their mic breaks and they get a new one, and it's awful. It's garbage. So, you know, these are all pitfalls to consider. Best way really is to have that discourse with your actors ahead of schedule.
One of the reasons for choosing to do an anthology, you might be one of these people that you always find every single day you're coming up with ideas for good stories. We've all had times like that where you think, oh, wouldn't that make a great story, or wouldn't this make a great story?
Yeah.
And if you're like that, you know, it's a bit like waking up and thinking, what can I write about today? And you're not burdened by a long-running plot. You know, you could write anything. It could be set on another planet. It could be set a million years ago or a million years in the future. It's just, you know, anything you want to do. And that gives you a lot of freedom, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. It could be set in heaven. It could be, you know, from the perspective of two ants talking to each other. It could be absolutely anything. So it's that freedom is what, like we were saying before, you have a freedom that you don't have when you've got very, very, very specific rules on not just the universe, but how the narrative is told. You know, you don't want to suddenly no longer tell it from one person's perspective, and then suddenly it's elsewhere in the world. You can't really do that, because you've set expectations for listeners. Whereas, as long as you've got a particular theme, you're fine. You can do what the heck you like.
If you're a violent person, you could be as brutal as you like in an anthology. You could kill all your characters in every single episode if you really want to. You can have a giant meteor crash into the Earth at the end of every story, and you can start again anew the next week or month or whenever you release shows. You know, you could, you've no loyalty to the characters, do you?
Well, that's right. In fact, it was something I was thinking before. You know, we did a 5-minute story called Blind Spot. Jack Kincaid, of all people, played the main character who eventually meets his demise. And I was thinking, I really liked the type of thing I was writing, and I wondered if maybe I could go back and do a few more stories where maybe even he's involved, because it would be set before that moment, you know? And I could do that, and it could be an anthology, Tales from the Cold War, you know, something like that. And why not?
I suppose in defence of the serialised side of things, if you love characterisation and really exploring histories, relationships, tensions, changes over long periods of time, you might really struggle to fulfil that in sort of half-hour one-offs, wouldn't you? That's something that you could work at slowly, gradually over time.
That's what we've said before, isn't it? That when you're doing a short story, you've got to get everything out there on the page immediately. You know, it's like a ready-made meal sort of thing. You've got to get it out quickly. It might need a bit of exposition, even a bit of narration.
What was it our old college lecturer used to say? Sorry about the long letter, for I didn't have time to write a short one. It was a quote from somebody, can't remember who. But it's true, isn't it? Though the more succinct you have to be, you know, that's difficult, because you've got to cram all that detail in, and it can't just be wooden expositional rubbish. Otherwise, your story will be wooden expositional rubbish.
And like you were saying last week, I think it was, that books, a lot of the older books, they had like 100 pages that were just telling you bits of detail just to set the scene, basically, especially if it was scenes that people probably couldn't picture because they didn't have Google in 1945 or whatever, you know, so you don't always have that time. But like a long-running story like We're Alive, Week Zero, they've got the time to, as they go along, not fill up too much time with normal detail, but as you go along, just paint that world, drop in a little bit here and there about the background of where what the world's about, you know, like in Edict Zero, the Five Islands. It didn't just start off saying, "Welcome to Edict Zero, based on Five Islands." But it does drop it in there along the way. So you've got that advantage that you can just build a lot over time, a little at a time.
Yeah, you never needed moments in We're Alive, like maybe Michael, the main character, saying to somebody, "Hey, remember that time the apocalypse broke out a few years ago and we all moved into that tower and lived there for a few years?" Because obviously...
And here we are!
So anyway, on with the story, because they actually took you through that. They didn't have to tell you about it. You experienced it with them, but that was because, you know, there was hours and hours of content there.
Yeah, and by the time you were halfway through part 2 of 3 in chapter 1 of We're Alive, that's about the same amount of time that most, say, BBC Radio 4 stories are finished. That's it over with. And you know, We're Alive's like, no, we're just putting our shoes on, actually. We're just getting ready to get going, you know? So that's the good thing that a series has. As long as it's interesting, you can chuck in your detail over time, and you can really build a really fully-fledged universe.
So in summary then, some thoughts and advice from us. I think certainly if you're starting out, don't just jump into a serial. We did that ourselves. It was a big mistake. Julie Hoverson told us not to, but we were already doing it by then.
Yeah.
And, you know, on hindsight, it would have been great for us to find our feet doing a few one-offs.
Yeah.
And then I think the start of Aftermath might have been a bit better than it was.
We were young and in love.
Dip your toe in as many genres as you can. Find out what you love writing about. Find out what soundscapes you really enjoy building. And after that, you will have a clear picture of what you want to, you know, the universe that you want to spend a lot of time in.
Yeah, and it's something I was talking about with another producer recently as well, who I've already mentioned a couple of times today, so I'm not going to mention his name. Jack! And It's basically when you're putting stuff together, remember one key thing: what is it you're trying to achieve? Whether it's the story details, whether it's music. Why are you playing music? Think, what are you trying to achieve? What is that trying to achieve? And if you can just bear that one thing in mind, that'll answer almost all of your questions as you're building your story.
In time, you can try like a mini series of 6 episodes. So if you're going into a series, that doesn't mean you're thinking, you know, that's me now every fortnight for the next 10 years, I'm going to be putting one of these stories out. You don't have to do it that way. If you want to spend a bit more time in a story, you could do a 4-parter, maybe half-hour shows. So don't feel that you're jumping into something on the scale of Lead Alive or, you know, a really, really long-running show that's racked up hundreds of hours, maybe.
Yeah, I think as long as you're putting out something that's fairly complete, if you like a full season, for instance, or a 6-part series or whatever, something that isn't just left completely open for a year, then your listeners will thank you for it, I'm sure.
So there was kind of a reason for doing this episode just now, because Robert and I have been bouncing an idea around for a while. You'll know if you sort of followed our work for a while that we produced Aftermath. It ran for 2 short seasons, and we've not come up with our next series, if you like. So an idea we've had, and I think we're going to run with, is doing an anthology series, but it's based in a fantasy universe. So these stories will be set, at least in the same story world. They might be set years and years apart or on completely different continents. But the anthology series will be called Valenhai. I think that's the working title, isn't it?
Yeah, and, good enough for me.
You know, we want to write. I think we both have a bit of a love for fantasy, don't we? For the fantasy genre, so.
Yeah, like many people that are into audio drama, it's sci-fi and fantasy are the genres that have kept us alive for all of our lives, you know, in terms of fiction that we've consumed. Okay, some real life stuff here and there, but yeah, we've done the sci-fi to some extent, and there is also a sci-fi story we have that's building along nicely, but with one eye on the future, yeah, fantasy, I think it would be, I've got 100 different little ideas that don't necessarily need to be linked up, but could take place in a fantasy setting.
We could even write a story where chaos and undead are friends. We could do that.
Yeah, that would really, you know, it would be similar to the original Star Trek series where Kirk and Uhura kiss, and it's the first interracial kiss on TV, and we'd be like, you know, oh wait a minute, you know, like interracial kisses and same sex marriages, that's one thing, but undead and chaos, are you mad? Children will be freaks.
Also, I think if there's one lawyer's letter you don't want to see on your doorstep, it's probably the Games Workshop. I imagine they're pretty serious when it comes to that sort of thing. Not that they own chaos or undead, but apparently, I hope they don't sue me for saying this, apparently they recently tried to sue someone for talking about space marines, and they didn't come up with that.
Wow.
So get that right up, you Games Workshop.
Goodness.
Didn't even come up with Space Marines. But, you know, I think getting back to our proposed anthology, there's an enormous talent pool now that we've had the pleasure of meeting and getting to know through this podcast.
Yeah.
So many great musicians, voice actors, producers, writers. So wouldn't it be great to involve that community in an anthology series and invite people to write stories in the world, invite people to voice act in it, compose music for it, and just really dip into that talent pool, because I think we could come up with some really great stuff.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of people that have said to us, hey, if you ever need a voice, you know, let us know. And I've always felt like, yeah, I would really like to, and I haven't, because we haven't made anything for a while.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to go back to them and say, do you know what, actually, yeah, we're going to take you up on that offer. You're now playing an innkeeper for 30 seconds or whatever, you know, or you're playing the horse or no, we'll find suitable parts, I'm sure.
Unspectacular roles there.
Yeah, if we write them, they will come.
But there is an enormous talent pool out there, like I say, and although we're talking about doing local stuff, I do still want to use some of these great voice actors as well.
Yeah.
because I think you can have a best of both worlds. I think there's certainly a good middle ground there that gives you access to all this talent that you could never have locally.
Yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it, that we are fairly convinced that having people all on site is the best solution for the best overall acting experience, but all the best actors don't live within 3 miles of where we live.
Yeah.
So we've got to bring in ringers, if you like, that live in the United States and England and Italy or wherever, and we're going to have to find that balance where that maybe the core cast are made up of local people, and we'll use remote actors for recurring characters or bit parts or whatever. Or I don't know, that's how I envisage it, but who knows?
Not a bad shout there, so we'll move on to the correspondence.
Ah, corresponde. Yes, sir. A great email. Do you mind if I fire into it?
Yeah, get going.
Right. Email from Chris, and his comment was, I love your podcast and appreciate the informative discussions. It's great to hear interviews with people who are actually working in the field and have a passion for it. I have been a recording musician for many years and have dabbled in book reading. Ooh, dabbled. I have also been trained in public speaking since I was a child and have always enjoyed writing. I have always wanted to get into film and loved acting in high school, but never thought I'd stand a chance becoming an actor since the market is so oversaturated with desperate waiters that are much better looking than myself. So humble. I like that. That's one of the big appeals of audio drama, is some of us would love to be in the storytelling field but have a face for radio. Thanks again for your show. It's very inspiring and informative. Plus, you guys seem very nice and are great to listen to. I agree. I, however, just recently discovered your show and I'm starting from the beginning, so it will be a while before I'm up to speed. Thanks again, Chris.
Thanks very much, Chris. That's a really nice email.
Yeah.
And glad we could be of service.
Absolutely. And it'll be 3 months before you hear this because you're starting from the beginning. yeah.
So
who else?
Bob got in touch on the Facebook group. Really nice comments from Bob. He said, greetings, fellow travellers. I'm on the audio drama path about 8 months now and just stumbled across ADPP, which is, of course, this humble podcast, and my research a week ago. I needed to say this. Matthew, Robert, you're doing a great thing with your podcast and your mission. My learning curve has accelerated so much in the last week that I'm experiencing nosebleeds. Thank you. Seriously, thank you. And aside from Bob's really, really kind words, he also pledged on Patreon. So he became the fourth patron, along with Karim, Kessie, and Umberto, who we, you know, owe the next year of the podcast to, I think, now that we've got some money coming in to help with hosting costs. So, Bob, thank you so much. That does mean a lot. And a thanks again to the other three of you as well for your continued support on that front.
Yeah, we might need to have like a bit of the beginning saying, you know, like, you know, like We're Alive was sponsored now and again by different things like We're Alive is brought to you by, and then there's pause and then suddenly music had cut in and it would be like an advert or something. We should maybe do something like that.
We could call them the Four Knights, the Four Pledgers. It's like a bit like a medieval kind of group, like a sect.
Like the Dark Knights of giving money. Generously,
we'll write that into the anthology.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, that's it. We'll name knights after them.
Good.
Knights of the Pledge.
We've also got a wee iTunes review from Jay. It's titled "Outstanding Scottish Geniuses,"
which I think means us.
We've never been called that before, and I don't think we ever will be again. But thanks for that, Jay. Jay says Robert and Matthew are the perfect voices for teaching all about audio drama. The writing, the production, the casting, the recording, everything you need to know. And it's great to hear how they've developed over time too. They really have come a long way since they began in terms of quality, but also in terms of their subject matter. It's also a great show for hearing other voices. A key one is Hitchhikers producer Dirk Maggs, who got a lot of people excited for a very good reason. I just love this podcast. 5 stars. Thank you so much, Jay. That's very, very kind of you.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. And I should say as well that you'll probably know that Matthew's finishing his sound degree. I finished my radio degree. And when I did my radio degree at the University of Sunderland, I happened to meet and get to know Jay. And that's possibly how he partly is on this podcast.
So that's where you paid him £10 for this review.
Well, absolutely. It's something like that, yeah. And Jay is now actually a lecturer at the University of Sunderland, so in terms of the masters that they do there, which unfortunately I wasn't able to do. But he has done his master and he's now a lecturer and he's teaching drama, audio drama, funnily enough.
Good stuff,
or radio drama at the uni. So the fact that he's come on and given us such a sparkling review is humbling. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
And an email from Martin Matheny, who's been doing some music for our shows. This is topical, as we were talking to another great musician, Kevin Hartnell, who works with Campfire, about a future episode on scoring for audio drama. And I really look forward to that, actually, because it's a very specific discipline. It's not just the same as doing it for movies and so on, but I'm sure we'll cover that later. Anyway, Martin's email was really about the things he learned during when he was scoring his first audio drama, which was in fact our own show, Time is Money. He says that scoring audio drama is and should be incredibly challenging. And here's one big reason why. If you're scoring for any visual medium, there will probably be times when your music is going to carry the scene. Think about the standard dialogue-less action fight scene, or as an even better example, the big wide shots of the beautiful landscape in the Lord of the Rings or Hobbit films, where Shore's score soars.
He's making that easy for you.
Yeah. Where Shore, that's the name of the guy, where Shore's score soars and the adventuring party traipses through an impossibly green field. In audio drama, you're not supplementing a visual, you're supporting other audio. And only other audio. For me, that means making sure that I'm writing things that aren't sonically busy, but that complement the storytelling going on. So for me, that means learning to write more minimalistically, using big melodic and thematic writing for the times when we need a theme, and focusing more on things like texture and orchestration for the underscore stuff. But, he goes on, I think audio drama gives you an opportunity to flex your creative muscles in ways that other media doesn't. For example, one of the cues in Time is Money, I wrote a straight-up serialist piece, a compositional style that was popular in the early 20th century, and not really since. In fact, I had a conversation with a friend who has done some writing for media about composing for you guys, and his response was, they let you write a 12-tone piece? Seriously? That's so cool! I'm not here to knock on formulaic composition in modern media. Look, there's a reason John Williams and Alexander Desplat drive nicer cars than me, and to a great extent formulas work in storytelling, whether it's musical storytelling or script writing. And I know that because Robert has spent a lot of time talking about it in an episode of the ADPP. But it's nice to break outside of the box and do things that are outside the mainstream as well. Audio drama producers are, I think, more willing to break the rules, even invent a few new ones. Audio drama, as a medium, appears to be growing in popularity, and the future is a bright one. I'm thinking a lot about media integration, or platform agnosticism, or something along those lines. That seems to be the trend. We consume media without thinking as much about the platform on which we consume it, and the lines between traditional media and new media are blurring more and more, and it seems more people are listening to podcasts these days. So yeah, there's not a lot of money in audio drama at the moment. I think a guest on the Audio Drama Production podcast mentioned that to an extent it's the same bunch of folks basically trading money around, supporting each other. But I believe that's going to change. Steve Schneider's discussion about producing audio drama for educational purposes, for example. This is a good friendly community of producers doing this out of love for the art form, and they want a collaborative, positive environment. The ADPP episode with Monique Boudreau and Betsy Palmer talking about team building and keeping your collaborators happy was so refreshing to hear. There's a we're all in this together kind of vibe that I dig. So, yeah, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, it's great insight into the mind of a composer, and it's great that Martin wants to get into audio drama and seems so passionate about it. And, you know, I really look forward to continuing to work with him in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's not a writer of the story or whatever. He's another worker in the genre now, and it's great to hear that from someone else's perspective. Because it's the one thing we don't do, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. I mean, I know you do the odd wee sing. I know you do the odd wee song in a band, but I don't think I've ever made a song in my life. Yeah. Willingly, anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks very much for that, Martin. That means a lot to hear from you. Spam email of the week. Now, do you want to do this? Do you want me to do it?
I'll let you do it. We haven't had one for a few weeks. This one right. came in, and it really is something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look at the title.
It's like someone has put a Scrabble board in the washing machine.
It's like a chimp poured a box of Scrabble into a wood chipper.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like a chimp with an infinite chimps with infinite typewriters would eventually type out the entire works of Shakespeare. But before they got to that, this is one of their earlier efforts.
This is page one.
Yeah. Okay, so the subject is, Chief has found Eleanor near the stairs, dead of a broken neck. Good start.
I mean, talk about clickbaiting, you're not going to not open that.
Yeah, and the address the email address is thnhpishj@mbaconsultores.pe.
Where's PE? Is that Peru?
That was my question. PE?
Peru?
Maybe. Here's the story, and you'll love this. This isn't a serial. It's not an anthology. I don't know what it is. It was like you took 100 different stories and just mashed them together. His invention was known as a wick carburetor because fuel was drawn into a series of wicks from where it was vaporized. Good start.
What about Eleanor? She's dead of a broken neck. Who cares about the carburetor?
Well, we'll get to that. They're building up to it. That was the Chekhov's gun at the beginning. Like, oh, can't wait to hear about that. It's the hook. More oversight of the banks in this market is needed, he said.
Who? Who said that?
I don't know. It is located at 623 South Magnolia Avenue. Pup family of light planes sold in greater numbers. Starting to lose me. In the absence of a few bells needed to perform the national anthem.
What? Oh, continue, I've got nothing. Yeah.
In the absence of a few bells needed to perform the national anthem, metal beats were installed in addition to the bells. Gutters range from about 10 points to about 1 pica wide.
Right.
To become one, they go under the same training as the rescue personnel with the exception of public safety diver. It's located in Urkala Sami Kovil Street. German lands, the same result.
So what, the two things in there, the fuel wick carburetor and the bells that you play the national anthem on.
More oversight of the banks in this market is needed, he said.
So, to become one, they go under the same training?
With the exception of public safety diver.
Which, of course, was, you know, an integral part of that email.
Yeah.
Not just thrown in there at the end. And it's a pity that Eleanor, dead of a broken neck, hasn't been mentioned again.
Chief found her. Chief has found Eleanor near the stairs, dead of a broken neck. Chief. Is that Master Chief? Is this Halo? So, yeah.
Interesting stuff.
The funny thing is, because you've copied this from the email, there's the bit that says Microsoft smart screen has marked this message as junk. We'll delete it after 10 days. And then there's the little optimistic blue link. Wait, it's safe. Not clicking on that.
No.
It's safe to say it's not safe.
So that's about it. We're in the car again, as we usually are now, recording the podcast, and it always seems to be a really nice day when we're sitting in here, just to make it really hot and sweaty, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've been lucky, so we've had to have the window propped down a wee bit, so there might be a little bit of noise bleed from the outside world, but what are you going to do?
I'm actually being taken out for my tea tonight. Julia's buying my tea. As far as I know, she's buying it, but she texted me earlier saying we'll go out for a meal tonight, which is great. Had my last presentation at uni yesterday. I think it went all right.
Oh, decent.
Everything's handed in, so I think it's a wee treat. Unless it's just she said, we're going out for our tea tonight, and we get there, and she said, did you bring your wallet? That might happen, but I'll get a steak and a few pints, so.
Very nice. Well, think of me while you're having that, because I'll probably be working, because I'm covering the general election.
Yeah, it's election day time of recording.
Yeah, so
I've voted already. I've been.
Have you?
Yeah.
I'll do it at after this, probably, actually. Yeah, I'll be at the local counting house for the votes for my part of the world, covering it for local radio, and I'll probably be up till 3, 4 in the morning until the big result comes in. But should be an exciting time. new future for Britain, hopefully.
It'd be an exciting time in the pub for me. I don't know about you. I wouldn't swap places, but...
No, me neither. I hope they're paying me, because they haven't said how much I'm getting paid. Oh, well, we'll see. Might be back on here next week asking for more Patreon pledges as a result, make up the shortfall. But anyway, listen, our website is audiodramaproduction.com, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, right, just checking. You can email us at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
That's the one.
I'm never sure of this. I don't know what it is about my brain.
It's just a website with podcasts at the start.
But I wasn't even sure of the website. And get us on Facebook. The one thing I do know is Facebook. The Facebook group. Facebook, but I can't say group. You'll get us on there, Audio Drama Production Podcast.
That's the one.
If you've got any thoughts about what you've heard from us so far, or you've got ideas for next week's episode, or on an episode coming up, then get the heck in touch, I say.
Yeah, and if you were interested in what we were saying about the new anthology series as well, and you're keen to get involved, let us know. Throw your hat in the ring for that as well. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, that's it. We need as many voices as possible. All of a sudden, we're going to need them, because we don't want the same six voices all the time, because otherwise it becomes like a sketch show, you know. Oh, he's doing the part at this point, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, get in touch. Keep listening. Keep writing. Keep producing. Keep editing. Do what you do, and do it with fervor.
Adios, amigo.
Buenas noches.
Notice no one in this car park can park properly. Some of the parking's incredible.
It's like there's been an earthquake, yeah, and everything's like...
Yeah, everything's moved.
Shuffled.
I mean, it's fairly well-defined bays. I wouldn't have thought it would provide too challenging for... competent driver, but there you go.
Maybe I'm a bit anal, but I couldn't leave my car like that. No. Especially that. I mean, that's a big car, right? That's not.
Yeah, you're really struggling when that's the best you could offer.
A bit of pride in what you do. And an email from Martin.
And there's the bottle bank. I mean, there's not a bottle bank here, but there's the bottle bank.
There's somebody with the ghetto plaster and he's got the CD, like, Urban Sounds, emptying a bottle bank.
What the f*** did I hear? Oh, of course, he's on hands-free. Aye. Right, good.
In the car, aye. Me. Got the megaphone on. Speakerphone not enough. He's got the megaphone setting.
The loudest phone on earth.
Oh, you'll have wired it through the car and it's coming out through the speakers.
Right.
Because that's handy when you're driving like he is.